नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वतीदेवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादि पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Hare Krishna. So thank you all very much for joining this session. We have been discussing from the second chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita. And in that second chapter we have been discussing, we discussed the initial section about the nature of the body and soul, Antavanta Ime Deha. Nityasyoktaha sharirinaha. So the body is temporary, the soul is eternal. So Arjuna, just you are not this body, you are the soul, and the soul can never be killed, so you should fight. So this was actually Sankhya. Right? एषा ते विहिता सांख्ये बुद्धिर्योगे त्विमां शृणु बुद्ध्या युक्तो यया पार्थ कर्मबंधं प्रहास्यसि. सो ही सेज दैट आई हैव एषा ते विहिता सांख्ये, आई हैव टॉट यू द अंडरस्टैंडिंग दैट इज नेसेसरी फॉर द प्रोसेस ऑफ ज्ञान. बुद्धिर्योगे त्विमां शृणु, नाउ जस्ट अंडरस्टैंड hear about the understanding which is necessary for the process of bhakti. So buddhi yoga, of course, sometimes refers to nishkama karma yoga and sometimes it refers to bhakti yoga. Okay, yaya buddhya yukto karma bandham prahasyati. O Arjuna, by engaging your intelligence in this kind of yoga, you will become free from the bondage of karma. Right, so then Krishna spoke about bhakti yoga. Neha vikrama nashosti pratyavayo na vidyate svalpamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bayat. In this process of bhakti, there is no loss by stopping without completion. Okay, if you start a marathon and stop after even completing half the distance, you know, there is, you don't get anything, right? Even if you stop 1 meter before the end point, you are not considered to be, you will not get anything actually, right? You have to complete the race. But in bhakti, it's not like that. Whatever, swalpam apyasya, neha na iha abhikrama nashosti. Even if you may not complete, you don't lose anything, you gain only. And pratyavayona vidyate, and by not performing, you don't get any sinful reaction. Like we saw in karma yoga, if karma yoga or your varnashrama duties, if you don't do it, the person does not have to specifically perform any further sinful activity. Not performing his prescribed duty is in itself sinful, actually. And he says, svalpamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bayat. One is delivered from birth and death even by practicing a little of this process. We saw last time, how is he delivered from by little? If someone practices little bhakti, will he be delivered birth and death, which means will he not take birth in the material world after this, after practicing little bhakti? No, this is not the case. The meaning is that a person who has practiced bhakti little bit, his next birth will not be decided by karma. His next birth will be decided by Krishna primarily. Okay. Now there is another question that comes. Prabhupada swalpamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bayat. Prabhupada gives a very practical explanation of this phrase. Prabhupada says, whoever practices even little bhakti, he is saved from the greatest danger. And Prabhupada says, which means to glide down to lower species of life. Prabhupada says. So if someone has practiced even little bit of bhakti, human birth is guaranteed. That's how Prabhupada explains. Right? Now my question to you is this. There is the verse in Bhagavad Gita which says, antakale cha mameva smaran muktva kalevaram. Okay, that is one. What is the verse next to that? Yamyam vapi smaran bhavam tejatyante kalevaram tam tameva iti kaunteya sadatad bhava bhavita. Right? Whatever one remembers at the time of death, he will attain that state in his next birth. O son of Kunti, there is no doubt about it. Now, my question to you is that, on one hand, I want you to think about it and answer this. On one hand, here Krishna says that whoever practices even little bhakti is guaranteed of human life. Because Krishna will facilitate that person's life, means he will facilitate in such a way that he can continue his bhakti. And bhakti can be continued only in human form, consciously. So on one side he says that one will get a human birth. On the other side, Bhagavad Gita says, Krishna also says, whatever you think at the time of death, that you will attain. So, how do we understand this? Is it that if someone has practiced bhakti even little bit, at the time of death, he cannot die thinking of a dog or a cat or some animal? Is it like that? Or is it that a devotee, if he thinks of a dog or a cat, then he will also get the birth of a dog or cat? What is the understanding? What is the understanding here? If someone is a devotee, on one side is Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that neha swalpamapya dharmasya trayate mahato bayat. Even little bit of bhakti if he performs, he is guaranteed human birth. On the other side, Krishna says, whatever you think at the time of death, that's what you will get. So which of these two principles works? Can someone... Okay, yes, Shyamu.
Prabhuji, it means that when Krishna assures protection that your bhakti will be protected, he also indirectly means that the consciousness that is there in the devotee, that will also remain protected. Okay. So hence, Krishna will not allow that devotee to glide down to the consciousness of a dog or a cat at the time of death. So hence, it may not happen that a devotee will think of a dog or a cat at the time of death. And that way, both the promises or both the assurances of both the verses will be maintained.
Okay. But my question to you is, while he is alive, can his consciousness degrade to that of a dog or cat?
Yes, that can happen if one falls down from the path of devotional service because of some offenses. Then one's consciousness can degrade down to lower species of life.
Okay. But what if he does not give up his devotion due to offenses, but if he is able to practice Krishna consciousness because of his addictions and conditionings, which is almost animalistic conditionings, and he is not able to give it up, what will happen to such a person?
Srinivatam's work, no, I mean that Gehe, no? That devotee.
Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe.
Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe. You continue his devotional service in the next life with better facilities, so that one will not be, one will not just waste time in trying to find roti, kapda, makan. That struggle will not be there, and one can spend more time in devotional service and cultivating bhakti.
Okay. First thing, that Shuchinam Srimatam Gehe verse is not for a devotee, it is for a yogi. First of all. So such kind of guarantee is not there for devotees, because a devotee may take birth in a very unfortunate, so-called unfortunate from an external point of view, that kind of family also. So that kind of guarantee Krishna, that kind of external guarantee Krishna does not give for a devotee. That is primarily for a yogi. And second thing, again, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam, this principle also does not apply for a devotee. That also comes in the 8th chapter where he talks about Yoga Mishra Bhakti. So, the principle that applies to a devotee is, Krishna says in Varaha Puran that if my devotee is unable to remember me at the time of death, no problem, I will remember him. And another thing, actually, Ramanujacharya had the same question to Varadaraj, right? So Ramanujacharya, by this time Yamunacharya had passed away, and he could not take initiation from Yamunacharya. So Ramanujacharya comes back to Kanchipuram, and then he asks Kanchipurna, "Oh, will you not accept me as your guru, as a disciple?" Kanchipurna says, no, I cannot accept you as my disciple. I am not qualified to be a guru." So then he asks Kanchipurna, "Then at least you speak with Varadaraj. Can you please ask Varadaraj and tell me the answer for these four questions?" And one of the four questions that Ramanujacharya asks Kanchipurna to be asked to Varadaraj is that, "What will happen if a devotee is not able to remember you at the time of death?" Okay, because you only told in Bhagavad Gita that yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tejatyante kalevaram. Whatever consciousness you have at the time of death, that kind of species, that kind of body you will get. So Varadaraj said, I mean, I will not go over the other questions, but the third question, Varadaraj said, for a devotee, he says, antima smriti varjanam. Antima smriti, that at the end of your life, that, you know, whatever you remember, you will attain. That principle does not apply for a devotee, he said, Varadaraj. For one who is practicing pure devotional service, I ensure whether his next birth is not dependent on his consciousness at the time of death. So, so that is the point. So that principle does not apply to practicing pure devotees. If they have started practicing pure devotional service, human birth is guaranteed, irrespective of whatever may be their consciousness at the time of death. Okay, this is the point. Any quick comments on this before we move ahead? Any quick questions? Yeah, this is a famous, yes, Shamon too.
Prajit, then Bharat Maharaj getting the body of a deer, that is just to give an example or to set some kind of a principle there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because this is, if even a sadhaka can guarantee a human birth, then how can Bharat Maharaj, who was at the stage of bhava, is not even guaranteed a human birth? This is impossible. This actually, in the 5th canto, Srila Shukadeva Goswami, while narrating this pastime, he calls this as Swarabdha Karmana. So Swarabdha Karmana, from a very external point of view can be taken as Sva Arabdha Karmana, which means he took a dear body because of his Prarabdha Karma. But the Swarabdha Karmana can also be understood to be Su Arabdha Karmana, which means a very auspicious kind of karma which looks like Prarabdha Karma, but it is personally orchestrated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because he wanted to accomplish some purpose, some lessons he wanted to teach through Bharat Maharaj to common people, to common devotees. For that purpose, he orchestrates it. Otherwise, it is impossible that a person, a devotee at the stage of bhava, what to speak of a devotee at the stage of bhava? One who starts devotional service is guaranteed human birth. How is it possible? So that principle does not apply to devotees. So in the case of Bharat Maharaj, this was specially orchestrated by Krishna. And Sukadeva Goswami describes that when Bharat Maharaj became a deer, in the deer body, he had 1,000 times more intense affection for Krishna than when he was in the body of Bharat Maharaj himself. So now the question is, if someone's devotion becomes 1,000 times more intense, how can that be called as a fall down? It is certainly not fall down. This was personally orchestrated by Krishna for a particular purpose. So that is the understanding. That's the understanding that the acharyas give. Yes, Shyamali Mataji.
So Prabhuji, then why is it that towards the, when somebody is leaving the body, in devotees also we have to chant and we have to make sure that they remember Krishna. Why do we do it with so much of isn't it like people intensely do it, right?
Yeah, that is, I mean,
what is the need if Krishna is already promising that he will maintain the consciousness? What is the need to do it so intensely?
It is certainly not because we don't chant and if they don't remember, they will glide down to a non-human species. It is not for that purpose. It is because it could be for multiple reasons. One thing is, at that time, the attachments can be very strong, because everything is going away. In order to create a favorable attachment, because it's such an excruciating time, people are looking for shelter, and by reminding them of Krishna, it gives them a better opportunity to make a very quick progress if they remember Krishna and progress. But ultimately, whatever progress they may, if they don't reach the stage of prema, they will eventually still have to take birth. But just you are trying to maximize their opportunity to even utilize the last few moments of their life to make some spiritual progress. That is the best help that we can make to anyone who is living or leaving. So that is the best help that we can do to them. You cannot sit with them and discuss anything else, because their faculty of hearing is working. What is the best way you can help that person? By helping him hear Krishna's name. But we don't understand, but our understanding is not that, if he does not hear Krishna's name and if he thinks of something else, he may not get a human birth. That is not our understanding. Neither will he not get a human birth, nor will he go back to the spiritual world if he has not perfected his life. So if he has not reached the stage of prema, even if he chant the holy names in his ears while he or she is leaving his body, they will not go to the spiritual world. They will just, if we chant, then there is a good chance that they will hear, because hearing is an act of devotional service. And because they cannot chant, by helping them hear, we are helping them perform Shravanam at the time of leaving their body. So it is helping them practice devotional service while they are living. That's all.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Okay. Yes, Shamon Prabhu.
Prabhuji, this statement that you made that unless one develops prema, one cannot go back to the spiritual world. But then we also hear.
I will clarify. Unless one develops prema, one cannot go back to the spiritual world to establish a personal relationship with Krishna in one of the five rasas.
Achha.
But if one is not a pure devotee, if one is a Jnana Mishra Bhakta or a Karma Mishra Bhakta, then they will never attain prema, but they can still go to the spiritual world and sort of, they can get Salokya Mukti, but they will not attain prema. They may not get a personal relationship with Krishna, but they can still reside in the spiritual world. So that is the point that I am trying to make. It's not that no one can go to the spiritual world without developing prema, but because we are just a group of devotees who are all trying to practice pure devotional service, we cannot go to the spiritual world without attaining prema. Right? Like that. So it's just like you are addressing a group of medical aspirants, you know. If you don't get more than 600 marks in NEET, you cannot get a medical seat, or you cannot enter a medical college campus. So does it mean whoever is there inside the medical college campus has scored more than 600 in NEET? Not necessary, right? You may have some people who have a team in medical college campus. Is the owner of the KEM hospital canteen, has he scored 650 marks in his NEET? No, he probably never wrote a NEET exam also, right? But when you're addressing a group of people, you know that all of them have come to prepare for NEET. So when you say that you cannot enter the medical college campus if you don't score more than 600 marks in NEET, then it means it is understood that all of them they want to enter a medical college campus to become doctors only. That is unspoken understanding.
Okay.
Right. So, yes. But yes, people who are practicing mixed devotional service at the stage of perfection, even though at the stage of perfection, they may not reach prema, but still they can go to the spiritual world. But in spiritual world, they will not have an active relationship with Krishna, because they don't aspire for it also.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. If there are no further discussion points or questions, then we will move on. So we did discuss this verse, Neha Bikrama Nashosti Pratyavayona Vidyate Swalpamapyasya Dharmasya Trayate Mahato Bayat. So we had an elaborate discussion of this. So many points, right? He says Buddhi Yoga can refer to Karma Yoga, Nishkama Karma Yoga, or it can also refer to Bhakti Yoga. So from now till 2.46, I think around 2.46, it refers to Bhakti Yoga, but later after that, it will refer to Nishkama Karma Yoga, right? So, and he says that because bhakti alone and no other process is beyond the three modes, a person transcends the modes only by performing Bhakti Yoga. Otherwise, it's not possible. Thus, the statement Nistraigunyo Bhavarjuna indicates that this section is about bhakti. Later he will say, Traigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunyo Bhavarjuna, like that Krishna says. Okay. And then he gives various verses from Bhagavatam to establish that how only bhakti is beyond three modes. Okay. And then he says, but you should not say, what if I perform my prescribed duties and offer all the fruits to Krishna. Is it not beyond 3 months? The Shastras say, no, it is not beyond 3 months. Is it not bhakti? It is certainly not bhakti. It is Nishkama Karma Yoga only. Okay. Ideally, the fruits of, you are supposed to offer the fruits of your prescribed duties to Krishna only. Only then you will get the fruit of Nishkama Karma Yoga. Okay. Bhakti means to perform Navada Bhakti. Okay. For the pleasure of Krishna. That is bhakti. But performing one's prescribed duties and offering the fruits to Krishna is certainly not pure devotional service, and that is also not beyond the three modes, that is sattva, that is sattvika. So that's what he quotes this verse, naishkarmyam api achyuta bhava varjitam. That verse he quotes. So therefore, till the 45th verse, 2.45, that we will discuss is Bhakti Yoga according to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, and beyond that is Nishkama Karma Yoga. Like that. So then, in Bhakti Yoga, there is no destruction and there is also no sin incurred if the practice has just begun and then stopped. But if Karma Yoga is begun and then stopped, there is no fruit and also there is sinful reaction. Right? Whatever, swalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhaya, even little bhakti when performed, it will certainly deliver him from the bondage of samsara. So, he quotes a verse from the 6th canto, yannama sakritavanat pukkashopi vimuchyate samsara. Merely by hearing the holy name of your lordship, even once, of course, it has to be either with faith or without offenses, then, even a chandala is delivered from material contamination, like that. So, okay, this is where we ended our discussion last week. So today we will start from verse number 2.41 onwards. Okay. Someone is asking, Yat karoshi yad ashnasi yad juhosi dadasi yad. 9.27. Is it within the three gunas? Yes, it is. It is sattvaguni. It is karma mishra bhakti as described by the acharyas. It is not pure devotional service. Yeah. Okay. Now, are there any other quick discussion points, questions before we move on to today's discussion? 41st verse. Okay, if there is none, then we will continue. Next verse. Vyavasayatmika buddhir ekeha kuru nandana bahushakahyanantascha buddhayo vyavasayinam. Vyavasayatmika buddhihi. Resolute intelligence, eka iha, is only one in this process. Resolute intelligence, O Kurunandana, O son of the Kurus. Vyavasayinam buddhayaha, the intelligence of those who are irresolute has many branches of action and unlimited desires. Okay, so there are two things. One is actions, another is desires. Okay. So, actions means sadhana. Desires means sadhya, you know, what you want to accomplish. Okay. So, he says, bahushaka. Only in bhakti do actions and desires are one. Okay. Ekashaka. But in all other processes, there is bahushaka. Let us try to understand this. Okay. Of course, we will read the purport also, but before we go to the purport, if you see actions or sadhana, okay, for a karma yogi, he has to perform karma and he has to perform bhakti also. Because if the element of bhakti is not there, he will not get any fruit. Okay. And for a jnana yogi, he has to perform jnana and bhakti. For an ashtanga yogi, he has to perform yoga and bhakti. Okay. So therefore, his actions cannot be one. It has to be at least two. Apart from karma, he has to practice one more. Bhakti also he has to practice. Okay. When it comes to desires, okay, when it comes to desires, for the karma yogi, for a sakama karma yogi, he has multiple desires. Okay. But for an ishkama karma yogi, he initially desires freedom, purification. Later, he desires liberation. Okay. And for a jnana yogi and ashtanga yogi, they desire liberation. Okay. So, but for a bhakti yogi, desires prema. Okay. So he says, resolute intelligence is only one in this process. Only in the process of bhakti, one has resolute intelligence. Okay. So if you take sakama karma yoga, there is bahushaka in desires only. Okay. And when you take action, there also bahushaka is there. Karma, you can't just practice karma, you have to practice karma and bhakti. In jnana yoga, and in sakama karma yoga or jnana yoga or ashtanga yoga, when it comes to desires, there may not be bahushaka, there may be one. Everyone desires only liberation. But when it comes to practice, there is jnana. Jnana has to have some element of jnana, some element of yoga also, some element of bhakti also. If you see Kapiladev's description of jnana yoga and ashtanga yoga in the third canto, 27th and 28th chapters, when you look at the limbs, there are some limbs of yoga, some limbs of jnana and some limbs of bhakti. So when it comes to the sadhana, their sadhana is not focused, and even though their goal may be focused, okay, but in the case of bhakti, the goal is Krishna prema and the means is sadhana bhakti. Okay. So only in the process of bhakti there is resolute intelligence. Resolute intelligence means there is one-pointed intelligence. But if you see and another thing, in bhakti there is sadhya sadhana abheda. Sadhana bhakti, what is the nature of sadhana bhakti? Shravanam, kirtanam, vishno smaranam, padasevanam, archanam, vandanam, dasyam, sakyam, atmanivedanam. Right? And what is the nature of prema? Shravanam, kirtanam, vishno smaranam, padasevanam, archanam, vandanam, dasyam, sakyam, atmanivedanam. What are the activities which are practiced by sadhaka, performed by sadhaka? The same activities are performed by the perfected devotees also at the stage of perfection. So, there is sadhya sadhana abheda. So the intense can focus on these activities either at the stage of practice or perfection. There is no need to lose focus. But in the case of karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, if you see, sadhana is different, sadhya is different. The goal is different and the means to attain that goal is different. And generally, if you see, intelligence always is very split. Like if someone wants to become a doctor, so he has to study very hard for it, right? He has to put in hours and hours and hours. So he has to keep meditating on his studies. But if he keeps on meditating on his studies, at some point he may become bored and lose interest. At that time, he has to meditate on the goal of becoming a doctor. Maybe he will imagine, oh, if only I can put some effort and I crack neat, in a few years, I'll be walking around with a white coat and stethoscope on my shoulders. And everyone will call me doctor, doctor, doctor. And patients will come. I'll be treating patients. Naturally, he'll be meditating on all these things. And then he will get the inspiration to study. Then he will study. He will apply his mind and intelligence to studying. And after some time, when the enthusiasm level goes down, then again, he will start meditating on, oh, one day I will wear white coat with stethoscope in my shoulders. You know, everyone will call me doctor. Like that, you know, you have to keep on switching back and forth, because you, to get the inspiration to do sadhana, you have to meditate on the sadhya or the goal, right? So that way, because there is sadhya sadhana bheda in karma yoga, jnana yoga and ashtanga yoga, therefore one-pointed intelligence is not possible, because the intelligence will always be shared between meditation for sadhana and sadhya. But in case of bhakti, sadhana and sadhya are same. So one chants the holy name, whether one is a sadhaka or a siddha. At the stage of perfection, just that it is no longer called as sadhana. It is no longer called as sadhana. It is called as anubhavas. Right? So we are chanting holy names of Krishna, his pastimes. In the spiritual world, Mother Yashoda is also chanting the holy names of Krishna and his pastimes. But she is not performing sadhana. Her chanting the holy names and chanting the pastimes is a natural outpouring of her love. Here we are doing some physical service for Krishna as a sadhana. There also she is churning butter for Krishna. But she does not do it as a sadhana. She does it because of her natural spontaneous love for Krishna. Right? So the activities performed by a sadhaka and a siddha are exactly same, only in the path of bhakti. But in any other process, sadhana stops completely at the stage of perfection. Because the stage of perfection, which is aspired by Nishkama Karma Yogi or a Jnana Yogi, Ashtanga Yogi, is actually impersonal merging, where all the senses stop working. Whereas while performing sadhana, they utilize all those senses to perform activities of either Karma Yoga or Jnana Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga. But at the stage of perfection, they want to give up their senses only, using which they were performing all the, sadhana. So therefore, only on the, in the path of bhakti is actually one-pointed intelligence possible. One-pointed intelligence is possible only in the path of bhakti, because only there one can actually have true one-pointed intelligence, where sadhana is only bhakti, the desire is only prema. And in reality, if you see in terms of composition, sadhana bhakti and prema bhakti have the same elements of shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, pada sevanam. So therefore, true one-pointed intelligence is possible only in the path of bhakti. So therefore, this is the most glorious path. So resolute intelligence is only one in this process, O son of Purus. The intelligence of those who are irresolute has many branches of action and unlimited desires also. So here, the type of intelligence that is possessed by devotees is glorified. He says, moreover, among all types of intelligence, that intelligence concentrated on bhakti yoga is the best. Resolute intelligence fixed in Bhakti Yoga is only one. The meaning of this is illustrated as follows. What is the meaning of the resolute intelligence fixed in Bhakti Yoga is only one? What is the meaning of this? He says, very beautiful verse. This is the explanation of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, after reading which Srila Prabhupada got very inspired to execute the mission of his Guru Maharaj. This is a very landmark commentary that we are reading. We all are eternally indebted to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur for writing this commentary, because when Prabhupada read this commentary, he dedicated his life to the mission of his Guru Maharaj, who instructed him to go to the English-speaking world and spread this Krishna consciousness movement. If this had not happened, we would not be devotees now. That landmark commentary that Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur wrote, we are going to read now. So this is a very historic moment in our Friday evening discussion, because we are reading that commentary which inspired Srila Prabhupada to dedicate his life to the mission of his Guru Maharaj. Okay, so please hear carefully. So, resolute intelligence fixed in Bhakti Yoga is only one. What is the meaning of this? So he says, the sadhaka thinks, okay, the sadhaka or Bhakti Yoga sadhaka thinks, or Bhakti Yogi sadhaka thinks, my sadhana is to serve the lotus feet of the Lord, to remember and glorify him as instructed by my guru. This is my sadhana. And that is also my goal. It is my life-sustaining medicine. For I cannot give up the sadhana and the sadhya. Okay. Sadhya, that is also my goal. My goal is, what is my sadhana? To serve the lotus feet of the Lord, to remember and glorify him as instructed by my guru. And what will you get? You will get the opportunity to serve the lotus feet of the Lord, to remember him and to glorify him. Okay. That is my sadhana and that is my goal. This is my most desirable object, my duty, and nothing else is my duty. Nothing else is desired even in dreams. So that's why Prabhupada says, Swamiji, what do you get by chanting the holy name? Prabhupada says, more chanting of the holy names. A jaundiced person, for him it is an austerity to drink that glass of sugarcane juice as a medicine. But when he gets cured, that glass of sugarcane juice is no longer an austerity, but it's a luxury. So therefore, for us to pick up our bead bag and chant, get up early in the morning and chant the holy names may be very distressful, not so pleasant. But, we may feel sleepy. But when we still diligently try to apply ourselves to the process, a day will come when we will lose our sleep completely because of our eagerness to chant. We would not want to sleep even for half an hour, 1 hour, because the two syllables Krishna are so sweet that we want to continuously chant. Namagane Sadaruchi. Right? So therefore, nothing is going to change from the stage of sadhana and sadhya. The activities will remain the same, but just that the mango has become ripe and sweet now. It was very sour in the early stage, but that same mango is now tasting very sweet. Right? So therefore, this is the meaning of resolute intelligence. Having no branch, having only branch. There is no multiple branch. Sadhana abhed. Sadhya sadhana abhed. So there may be happiness or sorrow. Samsara may be destroyed or may not be destroyed. That is no loss for me. let there only be resolute intelligence fixed in pure bhakti. So this is how the sadhaka is thinking. Marobi rakobi joicha tohar nitya dasa prati tuva adhikar. So manasa deho geho jo kichumur arpilon tuva pade nanda kishor. This is the mood. This is the meaning of vyavasayatmika buddhi ekeha kurunandana. That's what he is indicating here. There may be happiness or sorrow. Samsara may be destroyed by my practice or may not be destroyed. But that is no loss for me. But let there be resolute intelligence fixed in pure bhakti. King Kulashekar says, Diviva Bhuviva Mamastu Vaso Narakeva Narakantaka Prakamam Avadhirita Sharada Ravindau Charanau Te Maranepi Chintayami. Diviva Bhuviva, I don't really care whether you put me in heaven or on this bhumi or on earthly planet. Narakevar, even if you put me in hell, Narakantaka Prakamam, it is the desire of Krishna, the killer of Narakasura. Avadhirita Sharadara Vindau Charanaute Marane Pichintayami. But my one desire is you put me anywhere, but give me remembrance of your lotus feet. That is the mood of a person who is practicing bhakti yoga, you know. So my sadhana is to serve the lotus feet of the Lord, to remember and glorify him as instructed by my guru. That is also my goal. It is my life sustaining medicine, for I cannot give up the sadhana and the sadhya. This is my most desirable object. My duty and nothing else is my duty. Nothing else is desired even in dreams. There may be happiness or sorrow. Samsara may be destroyed or may not be destroyed. That is no loss for me. Let there only be resolute intelligence fixed in pure bhakti. This is actually the meaning of resolute intelligence. And we may have this, but the intensity may not be, may be weak. But certainly, as sadhana, we want to perform Navada Bhakti only, and as sadhya, we need Krishna Prem only. But we may not desire it, we may not desire the goal of Krishna Prem with the same kind of intensity that a very exalted devotee is aspiring, and we may not perform the activities of Shravanam Kirtanam with the kind of intensity that a very exalted devotee is performing. But in terms of aspiration, we all fall within the same category. Whether it may be Rupa Goswami or it may be a struggling sadhaka, the aspiration is same. The intensity of aspiration may be quite unimaginably intense in the case of someone like Rupa Goswami or Srila Prabhupada. And in struggling sadhakas like us, the intensity of desire may be very weak, but nevertheless, we are aspiring for the same goal. We are aspiring for the same goal, and we are practicing, we are trying to practice, or we are convinced of practicing the same sadhana. There is no doubt in that, there is no difference in that, right? So it is said, Tato bhajeta mam bhaktya shraddhalur dridanishchaya. My devotee should remain happy and worship me with great faith and conviction. Whatever situation he may be put in, one should be happy and worship me with great faith and conviction, which means one should not doubt the process. If I just to do bhakti, is it sufficient? But there is so much suffering also there. Maybe little bit of karma also I should do. Maybe little bit of prayaschitta also I will try to do. One should not think like that. He says, don't do anything which will challenge your faith. Okay. Don't do anything which will challenge your faith. Just remain happy and worship me. The intelligence of others, however, is not eka. It is not one-pointed. Those intellects have many branches, and thus the intellects are unlimited rather than one because of the unlimited desires to fulfill in Karma Yoga. You know, in Karma Yoga, the unlimited desires to be fulfilled. You know, while in this material world, one wants to enjoy many things. And then after one goes from this planet, one wants to go to Swarga and enjoy many things. So when it comes to desires, also there are multiple desires, right? And for instance, in Jnana Yoga, in order to purify the mind, one must first fix his intelligence on Nishkama Karma Yoga, right? You cannot directly practice Jnana Yoga. Nishkama Karma Yoga is a prerequisite. So first you have to fix your mind in performing Nishkama Karma Yoga. When the mind is purified, the intelligence then concentrates on giving up action, karma sannyas. So, so therefore you see here, sadhana, sadhya, abed, beda. So Nishkama Karma Yoga is a prerequisite to practice Jnana Yoga. And when you go from Nishkama Karma Yoga to Jnana Yoga, all that you diligently practiced while practicing Nishkama Karma Yoga, you have to diligently give it up while practicing Jnana Yoga. For example, Varnashram duties. Varnashram duties is a non-negotiable thing while practicing Nishkama Karma Yoga. But while practicing Jnana Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga, you have to give it up. Right? So, the sadhana and sadhya are different. Right? So, therefore, the intelligence cannot be one-pointed. So, he says, next, the intelligence concentrates on Jnana. So, first, it concentrates on Nishkama Karma. Then it concentrates on giving up that karma, karma sannyas. Next, it has to concentrate on Jnana. But the intelligence at that time must also concentrate on bhakti so that Jnana does not become devoid of results. So, even while meditating on Jnana, it cannot only meditate on Jnana, it has to meditate on bhakti also, because without the element of bhakti, that Jnana will not, Jnana alone will not give any result. Nashobate Jnanam Alam Niranjanam Achyuta Bhava Varjitam. If that Jnana is Achyuta Bhava Varjitam, if it is devoid of bhakti, Nashobate, even that Jnana will not give any result of liberation, right? So, if you want to achieve liberation by Jnana, you have to meditate on the goal of liberation. Okay, you have to meditate on initially Kama Karma Yoga, then next you have to meditate on Karma Sannyas, giving up that. Then you have to meditate on Jnana. Then along with Jnana, you also have to meditate on Bhakti. Right? So therefore, while having to meditate on all these things, how is it possible to have Eka, one-pointed intelligence? It is not possible. Right? So, so someone is asking, what type of bhakti does a jnani or a jnana yogi or a karma yogi perform? They do have to worship the deity forms of the Lord. They do have to chant the holy names of the Lord. Right? Those things are there. There are many elements of bhakti in their practice. So, he says, the intelligence then concentrates on giving up jnana. Okay? Not only you have to, then later at the stage of perfection, they also have to give up Jnana Sannyas. They have to perform Jnana Sannyas. So, Jnanam cha mai sannyaset, Krishna says in the 11th canto, right? Jnanam cha mai sannyaset, one should surrender such knowledge in order to attain me. So, even one has to give up the limbs of Jnana to attain liberation. Why? Because if you see, because liberation is beyond three modes. Even Brahma Jyoti is beyond three modes. But the path of jnana is sattvaguni. Or yoga is sattvaguni. Or nishkama karma is sattvaguni. So you have to give up those practices. So when you give up those practices, then what is left is only bhakti. But bhakti element should not be given up. The jnana element should be given up. When jnana is given up, only bhakti is there. That bhakti is trigunati, beyond three modes. So this is what in the 18th chapter you will see that what is that verse? Mad bhaktim labate param. What is that verse? What is the beginning of that verse? Mad bhaktim labate param. How does that verse start? Very famous verse. That is there in Bhagavad Gita. 18.54, right? 18.54. Ya Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Nashochati Nakangshati Samasarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labate Param. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Nashochati Nakangshati Samasarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labate Param. Mat Param Bhaktim Labate. He says that Jnana Yogi finally attains the stage of pure bhakti. How does he attain pure bhakti? Because the principle is, when you are ready to attain liberation, you have to give up the jnana element. He has both, his practice of jnana yoga contains both jnana and bhakti, but at the time of liberation, he has to give up all his jnana practices. What is left is only bhakti. And with that bhakti, he can attain sayujya mukti. So, the point that he is trying to make here is, you know, at the beginning you have to concentrate on, from the beginning you have to always concentrate on liberation, which is your sadhya or goal. Otherwise you will not get your inspiration to practice sadhana, right? But initially you have to concentrate on nishkama karma yoga and practicing your your varnashrama duties with detachment. Then after some time, you have to concentrate on giving them up, karma sannyas. Then when you perfectly do it, then you have to concentrate on practicing jnana. And along with jnana, you have to practice bhakti also. And then by this practice, when you become a jivan mukta, are almost ready to be liberated, then you have to concentrate on jnana sannyas, giving up jnana, and then finally there is liberation. So even in a jnana yogi's practice, you see there are six different things he has to concentrate his intelligence on at different stages of his practice. So therefore, how is one-pointed intelligence possible? Okay. Whereas for a bhakti yogi, at the stage of shraddha, he has to concentrate on the limbs of bhakti. Bhajana kriya, same. At the stage of anartha nivritti, same. Nishta, ruchi, asakti, same. Travanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, pada, sevanam. What about the stage of bhava? Same. What about the stage of prema? Same. What after you become an associate of the Lord? Same. There is no change. That is why one-pointed attention is possible only in the process of bhakti. That's what he says here. Thus, the intelligence or minds concentrating on different objects are said to be infinite or many. And the types of differing sadhanas are also many, since karma, jnana and bhakti must all be performed. Okay. In the case of a jnana yogi, right? Initially he has to perform karma, then later he has to practice jnana, and along with karma and jnana he has to practice bhakti also, like that. So therefore, whether it is for a karma yogi, he has multiple goals only, what to speak of sadhana. Sadhana is definitely multiple, but he has multiple goals. And even a jnana yogi, who may seem to have single goal, But when it comes to practice, there is Bahushaka. That is the point that he is trying to make here. Any quick comments, discussion points before we move on to the next verse? Anything anyone would like to share, ask, add? Yes, Shamon.
Proji, I have heard many, many times in other lectures that that this word sadhana, that is pronounced as sadhan, especially when somebody speaks in Hindi. So sadhana comes from, I think it is closely related to sadhya. Aap sadhana kar karke jo sadhya vastu hai usko praapt karne ki koshish karte hain. So then sadhana and sadhya, it comes on one side as similar meanings or one leading to the other. Now, when one considers it as sadhan, then sadhan means a means. It is a instrument, a tool in your hand. And sadhan karte karte fir aap siddhi praapt kar loge. Yeah, sadhya ko praapt kar loge. So what is the closer meaning? What is more accurate? Sadhan ya sadhana? Oh, is it a means or is it a tool? Is it an instrument? And or what it is, a process which leads to sadhana in that sense, sadhana leading to siddhi.
Yes, sadhana means whether is it sadhan as a tool. You can see it as a tool also, because a tool, after your job is done, you have a screwdriver, you want to tighten a screw. After the screw is tight, you keep aside the screwdriver. Similarly, if you see the when a Jnana Yogi or an Ashtanga Yogi or a Karma Yogi, when they perform their practice, once the goal is attained, they keep it aside actually. They don't practice it anymore. So you can, in that sense, you can see it as a tool also. They approach it in the form of a tool. But for a devotee, in Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, there is a difference between sadhana and abhideya. Okay. Sadhana and there is a difference between sadhya. Sadhya and prayojan. There can be many sadhanas and there can be many sadhyas. Okay. Sadhana means means and sadhya means goal. So there can be multiple means to attain multiple goals, right? But abhideya, abhideya is just one and prayojan is just one. Okay. Because one can perform multiple sadhanas with multiple sadhyas in mind without complete understanding of one's constitutional position. Okay. For example, studying medical books is also a sadhana. What is the sadhya? To become a doctor. So is it wrong to use these terminologies in this way? Absolutely not. But can you say that my abhideya is studying the medical books and my prayojan is to become a doctor? You cannot say that, because the terminology cannot be used in that way. So abhideya is only one. Abhideya is sadhana bhakti. You cannot say, oh, your abhideya is sadhana bhakti, my abhideya is karma yoga. One cannot say that, because abhideya means that practice which is practiced by a person who perfectly understands his constitutional position. Okay. Whereas sadhana can be performed by one who has not understood his constitutional position or one who has an incomplete understanding of one's constitutional position. Okay. When one has incomplete understanding or no understanding, they may practice sadhana to attain various sadhya. But when one has perfect understanding of his constitutional position, he may not have realized it. The very fact that he is still practicing sadhana means he has not realized it. He is still a practitioner. Okay, so such a person practices abhideya, and the prayojan is only one, that is prema. Prema prayojan. Sadhya can be many. Sadhya can be liberation, sayujya mukti, sarupya mukti, salokya mukti. They can all be one's sadhya. But sadhana is, but prayojan is only one, prema. So that's how he says. So if you take sadhana as the means, we say that that is why we say the means and the end is same for bhakti. Sadhya, sadhana, abheda. Whereas in the case of other practices, there is sadhya, sadhana, abheda. There is difference. Like that. Is that okay, bro? Shyam Mohan, bro.
Yes, probably. Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Anything else anyone would like to share, ask, add before we move on to the next verse? Okay. So if there is none, okay. It's 9:10 now. So according to our protocol, after 9 o'clock, if there are some questions which may not be directly connected to the subject matter that we have discussed, we can discuss. So if any of the doctors who are attending this session, if you have any discussion point which may not be necessarily connected to the topic, we can take. Yes, I see Shaman Prabhu has raised his hand. Yes, Prabhu.
Roji, we say that the Lord has appeared in five features. Panchatattvatmakam Krishnam Bhakta Rupa Swarupakam Bhakta Vataram Bhakta Akhyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam. So, what is the concept of this Supreme Being as five features in Gaudiya Vaishnavism? What is the philosophy of this Panchatattva?
It is just the point of that how the absolute truth is not monolithic, or you can say like what can you say, homogeneous. You know, there is variegated aspects of the absolute truth, which is broadly you can categorize it into five categories. Actually, you can divide it into multiple categories. It need not be just pancha. It can be more also. If you can, there are subdivisions between in these five categories. So, just like Srila Rupa, bhakti can be divided into, you can say, Vaidhi bhakti, Raganuga bhakti, or you can divide bhakti into sadha bhakti, nine categories. And that nine can be further divided into 64. And Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhaktirasam Sindhu says that in Hari Bhakti Vilas, there are lakhs of limbs that are mentioned, but I have summarized them into 64 and presented here in Bhaktirasam Sindhu. So, five is a kind of categorization that the absolute truth can be approached in these five features. Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakyam.
That the five together will constitute the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Supreme Absolute Truth in its five constituents, or is it any one personality in himself is also Supreme Absolute Truth without the support and need of the other? or all five together only will constitute the supreme absolute truth, and then they are interdependent.
You cannot separate the five. Just like in one sense, you cannot. They are not to think that even they are independent of each other. Those five features, they independently exist. In itself is wrong understanding. So it's just like milk has one aspect is white color, another aspect is a kind of fragrance that is characteristic of milk, then another is its fluidity, you know, like that. It has many and it has a sweet taste, right? So it has like various features. All are features of that one object, milk. So in the same way, absolute truth has multiple features which are all worshipable individually also, but the complete understanding of the absolute truth is you consider all the features.
Achha.
Yeah, just like Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabdete. So the complete understanding of absolute truth is Bhagavan the complete understanding of the absolute truth?
No, it is all three together at the same
time. Correct. So you think if someone says that Bhagavan is the complete understanding, but if your understanding of Bhagavan does not include Brahman and Paramatma, then your understanding of Bhagavan is not complete. That understanding of Bhagavan is not complete. Huh? So, Bhagavan is complete understanding, provided you understand that the Brahman feature and Paramatma feature are part of Bhagavan understanding. Then it is complete understanding of Bhagavan.
Okay, compromised understanding of Bhagavan is actually not the complete understanding. Is that okay, bro?
Yes, sir. Is there a essay on this by somebody? Some Acharya has written about Panchatattva philosophy.
Is there an essay on this? I can try to search. I think I have seen it somewhere, but I am not able to recollect exactly where. But I can try to search for it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else anyone would like to share, ask? Okay. There is... Oh, okay. Just hold on. There is a question in the chat box. In Brahmaji's prayer, he says, Yenya Ravindaksha Vimukta Maninas Anadrita Yushmadangreha. How the Jnanis fall down after liberation and again reborn as demons, as devotees generally speaks. Okay. This is a very long discussion. I will just briefly tell. A Jnani who attains liberation never falls down. This verse talks about actually a Jivan Mukta, one who may have reached the stage of Jivan Mukti at the most, but he has not really attained merging in the Brahma Jyoti or attained liberation, because with an unfavorable attitude or an offensive attitude or a disrespectful attitude towards Krishna, such a person will never attain liberation also. So what is falling down from liberation is next thing. How did he first attain liberation with an unfavorable attitude? That itself is not possible. So this talks about a person who can at the most reach the stage of a Jivan Mukta, but he is not actually, he has not actually attained liberation. Because with an unfavorable attitude towards the Lord, with an offensive attitude towards the Lord, one can never attain liberation. Like that. Of course, it's a long discussion. Maybe some other day we will take it a little more elaborately. Anything else anyone would like to share, ask? Okay. If there is none, then I think we still have 13 minutes. Maybe we'll try to see, take one more verse and cover it as much as possible. Okay. So now Krishna is trying to create a contrast. He is trying to create a contrast between the devotee who has one pointed attention and a person who is a karma yogi who has multiple desires. Okay. So he says, Yamimam pushpitam vacham pravadantya vipaschitah vedavadara taparta nanyadastiti vadinah. Right. The unintelligent people, avipaschitah, vedavadarata, who are absorbed in discussing the Vedas, right? Na anyad asti iti vadinah, who propound the theory that matter is everything, or there can be nothing greater than this enjoyment in heaven. Na anyad asti, there can be nothing greater than this. This is their argument. Yamimam pushpitam vacham pravanti. They attractively speak flowery words. Flowery words which talk about, enjoyment in Swarga and all those things. It talks about that. But unintelligent people, they absorb themselves in discussing these kind of things. And they say, na anyadasi, there can be nothing greater than this, because they don't have faith. In transcendental subject matter, they think that there can be nothing higher than this, like that. So, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti says, this verse speaks of the persons with wavering intelligence involved in sakama karma who are very dull-witted. So, dull-witted literally means those who have weak, or you can say, poor quality faith. Okay, they may actually, when he is talking about dull-witted, he is not talking about IQ. Otherwise, everyone who is in IIT or medical colleges, they all will be devotees, and whoever are the backbenchers and who are, dumbos, they will become karmakandis. But you don't see it that way. There are quite very intelligent people who are, according to material intelligence, they're quite intelligent. And they are actually, they practice, this karmakanda, and you have the very intelligent IITians and MITians and all these people. Most of them don't practice devotional service. So dull-witted means one who has poor quality faith. If you say that faith which is fixed in worshipping Krishna is top quality faith, then poor quality faith is in trying to one whose goal of life is to gratify senses either in this material world or in heavenly planets. Okay. They speak excellently. Pravadanti. They speak very excellently. Pleasant words of the Vedas, which are like a poisonous but attractive flowering plant. There are attractive flowers, but they are very poisonous. Since their consciousness has been deluded by those words, they are not endowed with fixed intelligence. Taya apahrita chetasam vyavasayatmika buddhir samadhauna vidiyate. This will come little later, few verses down the line. So the sentence is completed in verse 44. Okay. So he is trying to create a contrast between the Vyavasayatmika buddhi, which is there in a devotee, and this Bahushaka intelligence. What is the nature of this Bahushaka intelligence? He gives this example. Yamimam pushpitam vacham pravadantya vipaschita vedavadarata partha na anyadasti iti vadinaha. like that. Because of the impossibility for them to accept that fixed intelligence is not taught to them. Because they don't have that requisite sukriti and faith. So therefore, you cannot teach them bhakti directly and immediately. If you do that, then it will become the ninth offense to instruct a faithless person about the glories of devotional service, glories of holy name, anything. Right? So why do they speak in this way? Why do they speak that there is na anyadasti, there is nothing greater than enjoying in this material world, there is nothing greater than going to heaven and enjoying? They speak in this way because they are fools, avipaschitaha. Because they interpret the words of the Vedas such as the following. Akshayam havai chaturmasya yajinaha sukritam bhavati. One who has worshipped by means of vows of chaturmasya attains pious credits which never become depleted. Okay, this is what the Apastamba Shrauta Sutra of the Krishna Yajurveda says. Okay. One who has worshipped by means of the vows of Chaturmasya attains, okay, same thing. Apama Somam Amrita Abhuma. We drank Soma and became immortal. They say that there is no God other than this. You know, to drink Soma and become immortal, there can be no higher goal like that. So in this way, he is creating a contrast between those people who have vyavasayatmika buddhi and those who have bahushaka. They have many, their intelligence is many branch. They want to enjoy too many things of this world. Okay. Any quick comments? Okay. Let's move on to the next verse. We still have 6 minutes left. So next verse is a continuation. Kamatmanah swargapara janma karma phala pradam kriya vishesha bahulam bhogaishvarya gatim prati. Kamatmanah, filled with desire, swargapara, very anxious to go to heaven, kriya vishesha bahulam, they speak many words concerning rituals. Oh, this ritual has to be done. This ritual has to be so pakka. You know, you have to chant this mantra in this way so many times with this kind of intonation. You cannot extend this syllable little bit more or little bit less. It has to be very exact. Like that, they talk in detail about these kind of rituals. Huh? But for what purpose they are speaking? Bhogaishwarya gatim prati, for attaining power and enjoyment. Janma karma phala pradam, filled with desire and anxious for heaven, they speak many words concerning rituals for attaining power and enjoyment, words for giving the fruits of their action in the form of higher birth, by which, you know, they can by chanting those mantras and by performing those rituals, they can get a higher birth in heaven or something like that. That is their only goal. So what type of words do they speak? They speak words about various rites giving many results for attaining power and enjoyment. Words which give good karma in terms of birth. So they talk about that. Okay. We will do one more verse. But Krishna concludes in this verse that Bhogaishwarya prasaktanam tayapahrita chetasam vyavasayatmika buddhihi samadau navidiyate. Bhoga aishwarya prasaktanam, for those people who are attached to enjoyment and power, taya apahrita chetasam, whose consciousness has been deluded by that talk, vyavasayatmika buddhir na vidiyate samadav. For those people whose consciousness has been completely deluded by this talk, the resolute intelligence does not take place. They can never get resolute intelligence. It is possible only in bhakti. But for those who are deluded कामात्मानः स्वर्गपरा जन्मकर्म फलप्रदां क्रिया विशेष बहुलां भोगैश्वर्य गतिं प्रति यामिमां पुष्पितां वाचं प्रवदन्त्यविपश्चिता वेदवादरता पार्थ न अन्यदस्ति इति वादिनः. To such people, they can never get resolute intelligence because they are too much carried away by desires for enjoying in this material world only. So here Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti says, those whose minds are attracted by the flowery words, who are attached to power and enjoyment, do not have the determined intelligence fixed firmly on one point, fixed only on the Supreme Lord. The form of the verb na vidiyate is reflexive passive. Okay, anyway, this is some grammar. It's okay. For me, even English grammar is impossible for me. You know, it seems very impossible. Sanskrit grammar, forget it. Anyway, so in this way, today we did see the kind of intelligence which is very unique to devotees. Vyavasayatmika buddhir ekeha kurunandana bahushakahi anantascha buddhayo vyavasayinam. In contrast, the intelligence of those who do not have this pure devotional faith is said to be bahushaka. And what is the nature of this bahushaka intelligence? He describes in 2.42, 2.43 and 2.44. He concludes by telling that such people who have this kind of intelligence, whose minds and intelligence are absorbed in power and wealth, for them, this kind of vyavasayatmika buddhi does not ever take place like that. Okay. Any final comments, questions before we wind up for the day? Okay. So thank you all very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. Yes, Shyamlal Prabhu.
So Prabhuji.
Yes, bro.
I mean, in our workplace and everything, mm-hmm. we also have to excel in our jobs.
Correct.
I mean, so in some way, your buddhi is applied towards excelling in your job also.
Correct. Correct.
So,
how is it vyavasayatmika buddhi you're asking? So, now, here is where we have to understand what is the scope of devotional service. Is the scope of devotional service only in Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam? No. Devotional service means any activity which is performed in the mood of Anukulyasya Sankalpo Pratikulyasya Varjanam. So, activities which are direct devotional and activities which are performed to support the primary limbs of devotional service are also, they also fall within the category of devotional service only. So, Shravanam Kirtanam Ityadi, Shravana Kirtana Smaranatmika Bhakti is primary, that is Bhakti only, that is direct Bhakti, but all the activities which will support the practice of this which will support the practice of Navada Bhakti, they also fall within the category of devotional service only when performed in the mood of Anukulyasa Sankalpa Pratikulyasa Varjanam. So when you perform devotional your occupational duty in that mood, that if I proper in this, then I can earn my wealth by which my family can comfortably practice devotional service and I can do some deity worship also and serve the Lord and the devotees in this way. In that mode, when you perform your occupational duty, that occupational duty is definitely devotional service.
Okay.
Is that relevant to?
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So that does not make it karma mishrit because my focus is devotional service. That's what you said.
Yeah. In what mood do we perform? So occupational one's occupational duty in itself is not necessarily karma. So then that would make all the householders as mixed devotees. Certainly not. So it all depends on in what mood. For example, in Chaitanya Shikshamrita Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls them as secondary limbs of bhakti. The primary limbs are shravanam, kirtanam, etc. The secondary limbs are, for example, taking bath. So one may take bath. If one takes bath so that I can keep my gross body disease free and my subtle body or mind very fresh for my practice of bhakti, then that taking bath becomes a secondary limb of bhakti. So you cannot say 64 limbs of bhakti mein taking bath to nahi hai, to taking bath is not bhakti. We cannot say like that. So if that taking bath or performing one's occupation is done for the purpose of aiding the Shravana Kirtana Smaranatmika bhakti, then that occupation is bhakti only. It is not karma.
Okay. Right. Okay, bro. Okay. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Okay, so I think we will pause here. So thank you all very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. So we will meet again next Friday at 8 o'clock. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur Pad ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.